the need at wide receiver. Welcome, Bird Gang. On today's show, Paul Calvisi joins me. If it's not the biggest need, it's a close second. Wide receiver, a true number one, or at worst, someone who can be paired with Michael Wilson. The wide receiver talk is getting louder. One, because of who reportedly was in town for visits this week, and two, the reported blockbuster trade that went down Wednesday. It's Cardinals Cover 2, Episode 741, and it starts now.
Welcome to Cardinals Cover 2.
Buda Baker, one heart, one threat. This guy's unbelievable.
Cardinals Cover 2 is presented by Hyundai, proud partner of the Arizona Cardinals, and by Arizona Cardinals Podcast. Visit azcardinals.com/podcast.
He's at the 10, at the 5, he's in again! Some more Murray magic!
Wow!
Here's Craig Grealer.
So we'll get to the Stephon Diggs trade here in a moment, because I do think this may affect the Cardinals, both directly and indirectly, especially, Paul, when it comes to something you've been talking about, and that is, how does Monty Austin-Fort value the wide receiver position? Because I do think teams now have two extremes on how they view that position, but we'll get to that in a moment. First things first, the Final Four is this weekend in our building. Does our credential get us access Saturday or Monday?
That's right. If I walk in with my sideline pass, that should get me right courtside, right? Pretty dang close, right? When that ticket right now is probably going for about 5 G's based on what I've heard in terms of the market value. So you know what? My buddy in Indiana, lives outside Indianapolis, who texted me earlier this morning, hey, I'm looking for one for Purdue. No. Absolutely not. Sorry, John. Sorry. Absolutely not. Just telling you right now, not going to happen.
Can just like drive down the ramp. Field's not in the way like that. And just drive down and say, hey, you know what? I think I left something in the locker room.
That's right.
Week 18, can I go check real fast?
What I'll do is I'll show up and I'm going to have a hard hat and I'm going to have a work belt on. I'm going to say I'm here to work on the Cardinals casitas that are under construction.
There you go.
And then boom, I'll just watch from the cheap seats over there. That'd be good.
That's not a bad idea.
That's a good plan.
By the way, 7 years ago today, that State Farm Stadium first hosted the men's basketball national championship game. North Carolina beat Gonzaga.
Do you know, since it opened in 2006, I've been there for every single Cardinals game, and I'm trying to think, I was working that Fiesta Bowl. I've never actually attended a sporting event where I could go up and buy a beer. I've never actually been a fan in the building. I've worked every single Cardinals game, and a handful of Fiesta Bowl games that I've actually worked as well as a member of the local media. So one of these days, just one of these days, I want to go to one sporting event and actually be a fan and grab a beer and a dog and sit in a seat.
I think I've been a fan once. Fiesta Bowl, Oregon, Kansas State, sat in the stands. But outside of that, I'm kind of like right there with you, outside of concerts and stuff like that. But as far as watching a football game as a fan, I think just the one time, and I was at that Final Four weekend in 2017, but that was as a media member, not many fan events in that building.
You know what? Concerts, you're right. 2-3 years ago, saw Tool. Shout out to Maynard, Arizona resident, Maynard himself, Maynard James Keenan. So that was a heck of a show, 2021 or so. And actually, I checked that. You know what? Edit that out. That was the Coyotes Arena next door. I'm sorry. That's how you know it was a good concert. I don't even exactly remember the venue. Next! Go ahead, Craig.
That might say something about my colleague here, Paul Calvisi. The reason I bring it up is because Purdue and Alabama both arrived on Tuesday, and I wonder if that Alabama charter also included a couple of football players. Because, according to reports, Paul, cornerback Terrion Arnold, offensive lineman J.C. Latham, both visited the Cardinals on Tuesday. Arnold, arguably the number one cornerback. And remember, he told reporters he went one-on-one with Jonathan Gannon during their combine visit, a story J.G. confirmed. And yes, cornerback is certainly a top need, or one of the top needs for this Cardinals team, but maybe not necessarily a need at number four.
So Daniel Jeremiah, earlier today put out his updated top 50 draft prospects. This isn't how he thinks they're going to be drafted. This is how they are rated in his mind in terms of just the players and the ability. Number one is Caleb Williams. Number two is Marvin Harrison Jr. In fact, you have receivers 2, 3, and 4. Rome Odunze, Malik Nabers. Then you go back to quarterbacks, Drake May, Jaden Daniels, 6. Brock Bowers, the tight end, at number 7. You know the Jets are going to take Brock Bowers, and you know it's going to be the Kyle Pitts effect. It'll be totally underwhelming. You just know that's going to happen. And then Joe Alt is at 8. 9 is Terron Arnold. Interesting. Okay. I thought maybe his stock would go down after the combine. He ran the 4.5, whereas a guy like Quinion Mitchell ran the 4.33. But in terms of just being a player, Daniel Jeremiah is still really high on Terron Arnold as the top corner. Writing about him, he has the ideal size. He's just over 6 foot. Play speed, instincts for the position, great ball skills. He had 5 picks, 17 passes defensed last season. You know, he's rugged. He doesn't shy away in run force and coming up and tackling. And so what's interesting, though, there are two things. Number one, he went into Alabama as a highly regarded safety prospect who made the transition to corner. How often do you hear that? You always hear corners.
Yeah, it's usually the other way around.
Going to safety. So that's interesting. That's a little bit curious. And then again, the 40 speed is an elite. So to be the number one corner, he must be a really good player and really instinctual and have great technique because he's not exactly considered a burner.
Probably also the film, the quality of competition you face at Alabama versus what Quinion Mitchell faces at Toledo. That's why the Senior Bowl was so big for Mitchell. So I do think it's something to pay attention to. And then you talk about Latham, a 2-year starter at right tackle. However, he began his college career playing guard.
Aha!
Not one of the top 2 or 3 potential offensive linemen that we keep seeing and hearing, but if you're looking for one of those later first round selections, because I am not of the opinion, and if I'm wrong, I'm sure you'll tell me, Paul, even though you selected or signed Jonah Williams and gave him $19 million over 2 years, I do not think that takes a tackle off the board. Maybe it does at 4, maybe it does at 11, 12, or 13 should you trade down, but in the last half of that first round, top of the second round, I do not think one bit, because now all of a sudden you've got someone you drafted and Williams is here for 2 years, one at least.
Yeah.
And then it's year 3, 4, 5, and 6 that you've got that young tackle that you can pair with Paris Johnson.
I mean, daydream for just a minute. What if the Cardinals week 1 went with an offensive line left to right? Paris Johnson Jr. at left tackle, J.C. Latham at left guard, Yelda Froholt at center, although maybe he gets some competition from Evan Brown, right? Coming from Seattle, started almost every single game for the Seahawks last year at center. Will Hernandez starting right guard, and then Jonah Williams starting right tackle. Let's ball. Let's go out there. Let's maul, really, should be. And those are some of the words that are used about J.C. Latham. 6'6", 342. The first word in his NFL.com scouting report is bulldozer. With elite drive blocking ability. They talk about his torque. That's always a good word to use. I love that in an offensive lineman. His ability to torque and dump opponents. And so, yeah, they use the mauler word in there multiple times. And it's not the first time we've seen J.C. Latham attached to the Cardinals. I think there is significant interest in the Bama right tackle.
Something to pay attention to. And again, according to reports, those two players were on visits on Tuesday. Arnold, though, by the way, posted on social media a quick video of him and Malik Nabers just outside the Cardinals facility on Tuesday. So we do know they both were in town. And later on this week, according to Adam Schefter, Marvin Harrison Jr. is scheduled to have a top 30 visit with the Cardinals. Now, again, big deal, not a big deal. Yes, Cardinals, every other team doing their due diligence, figuring out which teams that you met with in the combine or the Senior Bowl, and you want to have more time, face time. Although I do think it does say who you bring in to your building, whether that's for a second visit or first visit, and if it's not one of the top-tier names. Because we've seen now 5 different wide receivers reportedly in town for top 30 visits. Jacob Cowing, from U of A. Brendan Rice, USC, Jerry Rice's son. Xavier Worthy, Texas, 4-2-1, 40 at the scouting combine. Not first round names, but potentially day two picks, maybe even day three picks. But you're bringing in guys for a top 30 visit for a reason. Maybe just didn't get a chance at the scouting combine or Senior Bowl. But I do think it says how a team values you, maybe even more the position, if you're bringing them in town for a top 30 visit.
I think it also says the Cardinals don't ultimately know where they're going to draft yet. You don't know what's coming your way in terms of a trade offer at number four. And if indeed you believe that your best offer will be when you're on the clock, then guess what? You have to be prepared. Is your first selection in this draft going to be at four? Is it going to be at six with the Giants? Is it going to be at 11, 12, or 13? Vikings, Broncos, Raiders. Are you going to get multiple first-round picks? Are they going to be this year or next year? Are you going to end up at 23 or at 27? Is that going? Are you going to bundle up 27 with another pick to move on up? As a lot of people speculate, Monty might pull a repeat of last year where you trade down, then you trade back up. So there's so many different scenarios. Who's willing to pay what? If you have at least four teams interested in moving into the top four to go after a quarterback, then what are they willing to pay? Certainly more than you got last year, you would think. And so with all that being in mind, some of these names might be a little curious, like, really, they're bringing in that guy? Well, you don't know where you're going to end up drafting just yet. And so, but that's interesting. Those first two names at the receiver position shows you just how deep it is. If you're going to use a top 30 on Brendan Rice and Jacob Cowan, and, I mean, beyond the big three receivers, I mean, I have a running list right now. I don't even have those guys on a list that includes A.D. Mitchell, Brian Thomas, Ricky Pearsall, Keon Coleman, Troy Franklin, Xavier Leggett out of South Carolina, who's getting some recent run, Ladd McConkey, who, remember, ran a 4.39 40 and is one of the better route runners and has great set of hands. Xavier Worthy, Mr. 4.21 40. Malachi Corley, he's the 5.11 215 just burner and mauler out of Western Kentucky, who they say could be a day one plug-and-play slot guy. Roman Wilson, who ran really well and a lot of people think was underutilized in Michigan, just like J.J. McCarthy. Those two guys in the passing game were never featured as much as they could have been at another school and another offense. Think about how many different receivers could be in play for the Cardinals day one or day two.
And keep in mind that when you're having this top 30 visit, you're trying to get intel on a number of different things. And it does say something that five wide receivers, according to reports, top 30 visits, four different cornerbacks, according to reports, have had a top 30 visit. And on the subject of wide receiver, I tease it off the top. Stephon Diggs getting traded by the Bills to the Texans for a 2025 second round pick. Texans are also getting a sixth-round pick this year and a fifth-round pick next year. My first thoughts were, one, it's the Texans. Cardinals don't play the Texans. Cardinals don't need to even worry about the Texans at all. But the Bills, they are on the schedule. Paul, you are going to Buffalo next season.
Oh, my goodness.
And now the Cardinals just cross off that number one wide receiver. You don't have to worry about covering Stephon Diggs, who at 31 is under contract through 2027. It's an interesting move by the Texans, who are now loaded, and I think it says even more about the Buffalo Bills, who are definitely in that reset mode, even though they are perennial playoff contenders, dare I say championship-quality contenders, but they just gave up their best offensive weapon, not named Josh Allen.
I mean, if you're looking at the Buffalo Bills roster as currently constructed, that receiver room, you have Khalil Shakir, Curtis Samuel, Mac Hollins, KJ Hamler, Justin Shorter. I mean, you talk about a team in need of receivers right now.
You're missing a name.
Okay.
There's actually a couple of different names, but there is one name in particular on that Bills roster.
Andy Isabella.
Bingo.
Because they lost Gabe Davis,
yes.
Right? He bolted in free agency as well. So, hey, if you can't beat him, join him. And Kansas City just showed if you have the quarterback, then theoretically you have enough in the receiver room because the quarterback can make – look at Kansas City and what they've done since they got rid of Tyreek Hill. So, okay, you put it on Josh Allen, especially if the chemistry wasn't exactly there with Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs and what was going on the second half of last season, especially if Josh Allen felt like he had to force balls and targets to Stephon Diggs, which we saw at times with the Arizona Cardinals and DeAndre Hopkins, did we not? Sometimes that can be counterproductive to your offense. So, okay, maybe you free up Josh Allen and his ability to go through his reads and his progressions and just find the open person instead of, you know, targeting Stephon Diggs first and second and then going to your third read. So it's a curious move, especially since they didn't even get much in terms of how great he has been and how dynamic. They got a second-round pick next season, which you got to figure is going to be a low-round two pick considering how loaded Houston is right now.
So the direct impact on the Cardinals is, yeah, Cardinals don't have to worry about Stephon Diggs on the Bills this upcoming season. Another direct potential impact. Bills, you just listed off the number of wide receivers they have, which they really don't have anyone as far as any substance on their roster. They now need a wide receiver. Bills have 11 picks. 28th overall is their highest selection. They have 1 second, none in the third, and 2 fourth-round picks.
Wow.
If you're the Bills at 28 and now need a wide receiver, whether that's one of the top three or if you want to include the top four with Brian Thomas, what's it going to take for them to move up? And now if you're the Cardinals, are you not scared? That's the wrong word. Do you have to play that game? Okay, we'll trade down. Can't trade too far down. But if we trade down to 11, 12, or 13, well, the Bills, desperate need for a wide receiver, might they move up ahead of us, take a wide receiver, and now all of a sudden, Cardinals don't get that second choice, third choice at the position. It's now a bunch of moving pieces that general managers are doing their own mock drafts and trying to get as much information as possible. But this is another team now I think the Cardinals have to take a look at as far as the wide receiver position, because it is a position of need for the Cardinals, and now it is for the Bills as well.
Yeah, Buffalo is definitely on the radar if you're the Cardinals sitting right behind you. Now, to your point earlier, though, how many assets do they really have that they'd be willing to burn to move up and jump the Cardinals? It's so deep at receiver in this draft. So, and look, if the Cardinals are going to end up with one of the big three receivers, either at number four or number six, then it's a moot point. I don't think they go receiver again as soon as 27. They might do it on day two, second or third round, and go for another receiver. I could definitely see that. But if you reverse engineer a lot of the mock drafts for the Cardinals, I think they are accurate in one regard. The Cardinals have three dire needs right now. Wide receiver one, cornerback one, and an edge.
Yes.
And so with that in mind, if you can get that extra first-round pick and you can come away with those three boxes checked at those three positions in round one, I can most definitely see that as an ideal game plan for Monty Austin-Fort and company. So any mock draft that ends up with the Cardinals getting a corner, getting an edge, and by the way, in the top 50 rankings, just updated by Daniel Jeremiah, it was interesting to see that players 12, 14, and 16 are all edge players. Dallas Turner, Jared Verse, Laiatu Latu. So if the Cardinals all of a sudden pull a trade with one of those teams in the middle of the first round, 11, 12, and 13, in Minnesota, Denver, and the Las Vegas Raiders, I could most definitely see them going edge with that pick they would get in return for trading out a number four.
Well, I'll just go back to something we discussed earlier this week, Lance Erline's latest mock draft 3.0, as far as the Cardinals selecting Dallas Turner with 11 after a trade with the Vikings. You get another trade with the Seahawks to get Brian Thomas Jr. at 16, and then at 27, Kool-Aid McKinstry, a cornerback, and that team again, Alabama. But now you've just answered your top three needs. You don't get Marvin Harrison Jr., Rome Odunze, Malik Nabers, but you answered your question. You hope, now this is all a projection, but you hope at edge, at corner, and at wide receiver to pair with Michael Wilson.
And then you have Cooper DeJean, the Iowa corner, rebounding from his broken fibula, which he suffered in a practice. He called it a freak injury late last season for the Hawkeyes. And so he's going to work out, and he's going to go at it. He's going to run. He's supposed to have elite speed and athleticism. So, okay, because Cooper DeJean has been linked to the Cardinals either at 27 or 35 in a lot of these mock drafts. He has met with the Cardinals. At least that's what he told the media at the Combine. So, all right. But as we went out back and forth on this whole cornerback position and how you're envisioning it, if you're in the Cardinals war room, Darren Urban and I told Herbs, I said, look, D, there are free agent corners out there. If you don't get the guy you want, or maybe you still need another corner, even if you get a rookie in round one or a top round two, you have Sean Murphy Bunting, you have Garrett Williams, and then you have some other young guys. But if you were to go out into the free agent market and go after a Stephon Gilmore, who is still available, right? Age 33, but he started 17 of 17 games last year. Four-time Pro Bowler, two-time All-Pro, he's out there. Steven Nelson, who was a starter last year for the Houston Texans, started 16 of 17 games. Again, durable, reliable. Four picks, 12 passes defense, age 31. What's he really going to cost? Maybe on a one-year deal. Dory Jackson, age 28, starter last year all season for the Giants, was consistently put on an island by Wink Martindale. Most say he had a better season than, you know, than you might suspect, just because he was relied on so much in so many high leverage and pressure situations. And then we saw Akello Witherspoon, who I thought had a fine season for the Rams. Saw him twice last year. He's still out there. Great size as a corner, 6'2", 195, age 29, started all 17 games, three picks. So he was considered the Rams' best corner last season. But they've hit the reset button on their secondary. So there are at least four viable starting corners who are out there in free agency that I think after the draft might be potential targets of Monty Osipor.
Handful of edge guys as well, and I think free agency certainly has slowed down. It will pick up post-draft when teams look at that draft board, look at the roster in totality and say, all right, well, we didn't quite address this need in the draft. We're going to need something to get us through this upcoming season, and then we can focus on that position next season. Problem with cornerback, though, if you do that, then that's two seasons in which you really haven't invested a top pick. Garrett Williams, yeah, day two selection, but coming off an injury, you would have felt better if you selected him and he was available the entire offseason, maybe showed you a little bit more consistent play as a rookie. But it is something that this Cardinals team needs to focus on. Then you get back to the edge rush position, and this, how does this team view that edge rush when you only had 33 sacks? Do they view cornerback more because quarterbacks are getting the ball out so quickly to negate that pass rush?
I think it's conspicuous by its absence in the offseason. You didn't get that big-time free agent receiver. You didn't get that big-time free agent corner, although Sean Murphy Bunting is a fine addition. I think we all agree cornerback two would be his ideal position. So I think that's telling right there that the Cardinals obviously have designs to go down swinging in the draft, early in the draft of those two positions. If for some reason it doesn't work out and you don't have the guy you want and you go a different direction in terms of positions, then all right, you go back to the free agent well. But I think if you're Monty Osipor, and this is a big reason why I do believe someone is going to make up the Cardinals GM's mind for him at number four, I think there will be an offer he can't refuse. I think he will trade out a number four. And whether he goes down to six and still gets one of the three big receivers or just gets another pick or two, the quarterback surcharge, right, the quarterback kicker, because guess what? You'd love to come away round one with a corner, an edge player, and either an offense, well, receiver, absolutely. And then if you can go after one of the offensive tackles atop with pick number 35, a top round two, a guy who could theoretically play guard, man, that would be an absolute home run. And it's hard not to notice that seven offensive tackles are in Daniel Jeremiah's top 23. Think about that. That's how loaded that position group is. So, all right, what does that mean? Is there going to be a run on those guys? Because somebody brought this up, and you know what? I think this was an astute observation. Sometimes when a position group is so loaded, teams will go after other position groups early, because there's supply later. And then all of a sudden, there's a run. Late round one, top of round two, Cardinals sitting there at 27 and 35. Maybe that's where they get the receiver and or the offensive tackle, because a lot of teams will wait, and there's a lot of supply. You figure, you know what? There's going to be a guy, a receiver or a tackle at 27 and 35. Just be patient.
Once that first tackle goes off the board and then a second, then teams start worrying. It's like, wait a second, now teams are focusing on that position that has a lot of depth, and we thought maybe we could wait. Do we need to force the issue and get the guy now as opposed to waiting? That's another game that general managers play. Not sure how many saw it. I'm sure many did because it was making the rounds once again. Not sure why, but the draft room video of Monty Austin Fort working the phones with JG and Michael Bidwell sitting in awe, literally the mouths open, smiling, that video resurfaced on social media on Tuesday, and it does beg the question. We've been talking about the trade down, haven't really talked much about the trade back up. Might we see a repeat performance from Monty Hall going from 4 to 11 back up to 7, 8, or 9? Wouldn't be the first time. It does take more work, and I think that's where the work is being done now, to where you can be Monty when you're on the clock, 10 minutes to go, and you can seem so calm and have those conversations with ease, whether on the phone, your front office staff, didn't seem rushed. No panic whatsoever. How much time I got left? 6 minutes, Monty. Okay, let's take a look at this again. I'm sitting there even watching it after the fact, even a year later, you're like, what are you doing? Make a decision. The time is running down. I'm okay. Guys, relax. I've got it covered.
Well, you said it, Craig. It resurfaced. Well, we know why, because good content is king, right? A good movie never gets old. You're going to watch it infinite number of times on reruns. So you know what? That's great video. It's all access. It's behind the scenes. It's where everyone wants to be in an NFL war room. It's where we'll never be in an NFL war room. So boom, that video resurfaces and you watch the maestro. Although I like your nickname. I forgot about that one. Monty Hall, H-A-U-L. And Michael Bidwell, team owner, I think described it perfectly when he said, yeah, Monty had a bunch of spinning plates going. Got a bunch of different things in the hopper simultaneously in real time. But remember, at number 3 overall, what did Monty have? He had Will Anderson Jr. as the default. What does Monty have at number 4 this year? Theoretically, he has Marvin Harrison Jr. as the default. So if things get squirrely, and or if teams try and pull a fast one and not give you what you were expecting, or they're not giving you what you're demanding in the moment, that's all right. You know what? I'm going to go after Marvin Harrison Jr. Thanks, but no thanks. Click, Sean Payton. See you later, LA, Las Vegas Raiders. See you later, Minnesota Vikings. No, you're not getting Drake May. You're not getting J.J. McCarthy here. Sorry, you can go ahead and call Jim Harbaugh and try and deal with him.
So, by the way, full disclosure, I believe it was our executive producer, Jim Omohundro, who came up with that Monty Hall nickname a year ago. So all credit to Omo. And just watching that video again, you kind of forget what was the trade packages, moving down from 3 to 12 because it's not much different from going from 4 to 11.
Yep.
Although the difference between last year there were two quarterbacks at the top. This year, we think there are four, although Michael Penix Jr. now all of a sudden visiting with the Raiders, who are sitting there at number 12. Is he making a move up the board? Are there more quarterbacks in line to be hearing their name earlier in the draft than a year ago when it was just two names? So the Cardinals go from 3 to 12 and get a second round, which was 33rd overall, plus a future first and a future third from the Texans. We've all been talking about the Cardinals going from 4 to 11 or 12 for multiple first round picks. With the Vikings, it's a swap and then 23 in addition to potentially a 25 or a 26. Are we asking or are we expecting too much in a trade down, whereas the package from a year ago was considerably less than what we're talking about in a move with the Vikings? But is that because it's, to your point, it's Will Anderson versus J.J. McCarthy, Drake May, Michael Penix? It's position player versus quarterback who might be on the board.
Yep, and that's one of three reasons why it is more this year. The QB surcharge, the QB kicker, as we said, I mean, what is a franchise QB worth to your franchise? No quarterback, no chance. So guess what? Next year's draft, if you haven't looked, by the way, is bereft of any real good quarterback prospects. So that also heightens the urgency and raises the price tag on getting a quarterback this year. Number two, did you see what happened last year? Cardinals went ahead and they traded with Houston, and all of a sudden they took a massive leap forward. So the Cardinals are taking a risk if you trade out of number four. Where exactly is your first-round pick going to land? If this quarterback is the guy you think he is, and he can elevate your team. Look at the Raiders, for example. Do you know what, after Antonio Pierce took over in Week 9, they had the number one scoring defense the rest of the season? Give them a viable quarterback? Look out, right? And so look at Minnesota. 2 years ago, they won 11 or 12 games. Or maybe it was 13 games. They won 11-0 in one score games just 2 years ago. Give them a quarterback after they lost Kirk Cousins midway through last year. What happens to the Vikings? So the Cardinals are taking the risk. They could end up with a low first-round pick next year, just like what happened this year with Houston when C.J. Stroud and D'Amico Ryans defied all the doubters and defied NFL history, really, as a rookie head coach and a rookie quarterback. And then number three is just inflation. Craig, have you seen what your bills are these days? How much more you're paying? Whether it's at the grocery store, for your car and home insurance, right? Everything has gone up. So guess what? Rest of the NFL, if you want number four, your price has gone up here in 2024 as well.
Speaking of inflation, are we inflating some of these quarterbacks? Because I keep hearing, I believe it was Daniel Jeremiah who first mentioned it, that next year's quarterback draft class is not nearly as good as this year's. Well, flashback a year ago, how many of us had J.J. McCarthy in the conversation of being a top five pick? Is there someone, Joe Burrow, when he won the Heisman Trophy and the national championship at LSU, he was on no one's radar the year before. Is there a quarterback in 2024's college season that all of a sudden we're talking about in 2025? And, well, maybe those teams will take advantage and be beneficial to waiting till next season. I have no idea. I haven't looked that deep into the 2025 draft class, but there's always players who come out of nowhere and all of a sudden it's like, oh, this draft class is deep compared to last year. Wait a second. We've got five guys now that might hear their name called in the first 10 picks. Now you're telling me that there are more for next year? I think we're prisoners in the moment sometimes about this. And again, it goes back to, well, the season ends in January, late February for some, and we've got months to talk about the draft. And what are we going to talk about? Well, we're going to talk about speculation, moving up, moving down, and all these draft prospects. They're all going to hit. They're all going to be all pros. They're all going to be future Hall of Famers. It just doesn't happen that way when you look back 4 or 5 years later.
So NFL.com put out a question, and it went like this. Will the first four picks in the 2024 NFL draft be quarterbacks for the first time in league history? My opinion, yes. A definitive yes. I think a lot of it, Craig, and look, history says at least one, if not two, of those four quarterbacks will be busts. Yes. There will be a Zach Wilson, there will be a Trey Lance, there will be a Blake Bortles, fill in the blank. Here's the thing. If you're the Denver Broncos, can you go into next season, sell next season to your fans, if you have Jared Stidham as your starter? If you're the Minnesota Vikings, can you really tell your fans, who actually had Super Bowl expectations this time a year ago, coming off that playoff run, that Sam Darnold is going to lead you to the promised land? It's almost like you're cashing in the season before it ever starts. So by taking a quarterback, in some ways, it's a business decision for these teams in that you're selling the hope and the prospect. There are a lot of fans who are waiting to see what their team does because, once again, no quarterback, no chance. And then when you hear the Giants, for one, and ownership signing off, John Mara telling the media during the breakfast media sessions or the NFL league meetings that he has given his blessing to team leadership to go after a franchise quarterback. You realize, okay, there are some teams that are sick and tired of looking at their own quarterback situation. And the clock is ticking for a lot of these owners advanced in age. They want something to happen yesterday. Hence, that's why I truly believe, once again, that Monty Osford is in the pivot seat of this draft.
Well, maybe why the Atlanta Falcons and Arthur Blank went after Kirk Cousins as hard as they did. Another article up on NFL.com, which team most needs to trade up in round one? The Broncos, a popular choice because, as you mentioned it, Paul, the quarterback situation. Jeffrey Chedia wrote, the Broncos have arguably the worst quarterback situation in the NFL. Chad Ryder, acquiring one of the top four quarterbacks gives the team direction and its fans something to believe in. The Raiders, another popular choice. Vikings and Giants mentioned as well because you've got Jared Stidham in Denver. You got Aiden O'Connell in Las Vegas, Sam Darnold in Minnesota, and Daniel Jones in New York. Those names just don't move the meter for fans and for owners. Now, for general managers and everyone else like that, different story. But is there going to be a team that the owner says, this is what I want versus what a general manager thinks is best long term.
It's the old adage. You know what? We believe what we see more than what we hear out of the mouths of these NFL decision makers. For example, the Giants showed up in mass for the Drake May Pro Day. Really? Why is that? The Giants sent out their head coach, their GM, and their offensive coordinator to Seattle for the Michael Penix Pro Day. Interesting. The Denver Broncos, after the Pro Day at Michigan for J.J. McCarthy, held their own private workout the next day for J.J. McCarthy that Sean Payton was all too happy to talk about at the breakfast meeting, where he said, "We sent J.J. a bunch of information, spent 4 or 5 hours with him, made him throw all over again." So, and then when he says, when asked, is it realistic, Sean Payton, you could truly trade up from 12 and get that franchise quarterback? And he immediately answers yes, and then follows with the now famous quote, "It's good to be Monty Ossenfort." It's in play. It's most definitely in play. Will the trigger be pulled sometime before draft day? Probably not. Probably not even until the Cardinals are on the clock. But there's no doubt, in my opinion, that Monty has Minnesota, Denver, the Raiders, and the Giants right now on 4 different phone lines, and he's trying to leverage all of them against each other.
Of course, draft night, Monty Ossenfort will come down and say, "I don't know what you guys were thinking. We were not going to do anything. We were staying and picking, and Marvin Harrison Jr. is our guy. Have you looked at our wide receiver room? We think he's going to be outstanding. Kyler Murray and MHJ, they're going to be key for years to come." I think that's a possibility that that could happen.
Could be.
And that brings us full circle as far as the trade of Stephon Diggs to the Texans, because indirectly, I think this might say something on where certain teams view the wide receiver position when it comes to a second or third contract. Wide receivers, you need to get them young. And I don't know, based off of Tyreek Hill, Stephon Diggs now, those wide receivers that are getting paid, are they worth the money considering the production? Yes, they're producing, but are they getting the teams to where they want to be? Deep playoff runs. Davante Adams, 1 championship game appearance. Stephon Diggs, 1 championship game appearance with Buffalo. How many Super Bowls? None. Mike Evans, to my recollection, really the veteran receiver with Tampa Bay to get that Super Bowl ring after a lengthy career. This is nothing, you know, Cooper Kupp's still young with the Rams. But those veteran wide receivers who command high dollars, that second or third contract, they're producing. Diggs, 4-time Pro Bowler, all 4 seasons with the Bills. But are they uplifting everyone else on their team? And I'm not sure the wide receiver position for those guys that are 27, 28, 29, they're going to see that money come down considerably, especially if the Bills in 2025 advance and play well and are moving the ball up and down the field, and they do it without their number one playmaker.
Yeah, it's a good point. It's well said. It's such a dependent position, right? If you don't have the quarterback, your receiver's not going to eat. If you can't protect that quarterback, there's not enough time to get your receiver the ball. So, and now we've seen quarterbacks prove, hey, just give me a set of average receivers. If you give me a run game and you give me an offensive line, I'll make it viable. I'll make it feasible. We saw Kurt Warner do that at different times, even for the Arizona Cardinals. The key was solidifying that offensive line. And so, all right, here you go. You have this whole list of seemingly 20 legitimate day one or day two receivers, right? I mean, in the top 3 rounds, there's going to be probably 20 receivers taken. Maybe a baker's dozen. But if you can get one of those guys, whereas opposed to like the other group that I thought just got stupid money in free agency were the edge rushers. How many edge rushers are in this draft? Supply and demand. Where are you going to get that edge rusher? That's why I'm convinced the Cardinals, that's going to be the first position they target if they trade out of number 4. If they trade out of number 4, I think the first position player they take will be an edge. Because where else are you getting that guy where you're not paying through the nose? You know, the only thing about the Texans I forgot about, you brought it up before we cracked the mics, Danielle Hunter's going to Houston. Oh, my goodness. So Stephon Diggs they added. They have Nico Collins. They have Tank Dell. They added Joe Mixon, who's a dude at running back. That offensive line is good enough. They've tried to bolster that. I guess I'm imagining they target that in the draft because it's very deep in offensive line. And now they fortified their front. And then you saw what Derek Stingley Jr. was like as a corner the second half of last season once he got totally healthy and he got some reps in the NFL. That is a scary team on the up trajectory, no doubt.
And they can do it because they hit on their quarterback, the most important position. C.J. Stroud showed them in year one, we've got our guy. And if you've got your guy, then you can do what the Texans did earlier on Wednesday and then worry about it down the road. But if you do make that decision, then all of a sudden you better hit and you better have success. The Bills 4 years ago acquiring Stephon Diggs, absolutely great move. In hindsight, maybe not, because you didn't get that Super Bowl ring, let alone a Super Bowl appearance with the number one wide receiver. Again, it's the veteran wide receivers that I'm talking about, not the young guys. You need those wide receivers, that first contract. And I think wide receiver, edge rusher, those positions that cost you later on, you find them in the draft, then all of a sudden you don't have to worry about it later on, and you can build around with other positions with that money that you're not paying to the wide receiver or edge position.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Nick Caserio, the GM, who, by the way, is very tight with Monty Asenfort going back to their New England days. It's not a fluke that the Cardinals swung a deal with Houston last year while on the clock in the first round. So you look at Houston and you just hope that is a blueprint for the Big Red. That, you know, we talked about the Honolulu blueprint, right? Detroit and what the Lions did, and they fortified the offense. The Lions shunned the receiver spot early and went after Penei Sewell. The Lions built that offensive line because even when they had Calvin Johnson, a Hall of Fame receiver, what did it do for their postseason fortunes? Absolutely nothing. So once again, I'm preparing myself for that same sort of mentality. A mix of what the Lions did and then combined with what the Texans did. The big difference, to your point, is they have a quarterback on a rookie contract. So they can go out, they can pay through the nose for a Danielle Hunter off the edge. They can go out and pay big money, $19 million plus to Stephon Diggs to be your number one receiver. They can go out and they can pay big money to the running back position and Joe Mixon because they have the rookie quarterback. But kudos to them for being aggressive, realizing, oh boy, we got a dude at quarterback in C.J. Stroud. He was a Pro Bowler in year one. Only 5 interceptions. How ridiculous. Led the NFL also in yards passing per game. All right, guess what? We're all in effective immediately because we saw enough from our rookie quarterback, and we're going to go for it while he's on that rookie contract. That's smart football.
Hey, the Cardinals did it not that long ago. DeAndre Hopkins.
Yep.
Acquiring that major playmaker that was going to send this team into a deep playoff run. Again, hindsight. Didn't work, but you had a quarterback under a rookie contract. You had Chandler Jones as your edge rusher under contract, who was balling out. Yeah. So everything
you brought in J.J. Watt.
Everything fit then, but it didn't pay off, and that's what I think the Texans are doing. You hope that it works, it makes sense, but in 5 years from now, you're going to look back, and hopefully if you have that Lombardi trophy, success. If you don't, it's like, well, now we're back to square one, and now you've got C.J. Stroud making a lot of money, and now you need to supplement around him with a lot of young talent.
You know, one of the low-key great games next year is when the Houston Texans visit the Dallas Cowboys. That's going to be good theater. Houston going up to Jerry World, into Metro Dallas, and you know what? Here we go. And if the Texans go up there and whoop up on some Dallas Cowboys, right, dadgummit, all of a sudden, you think about Cowboy Nation and Jerry Jones and what sort of uproar that'll cause if they're not the king of NFL football in Texas any longer, because it doesn't take a genius to see the Texans are on the upswing and the Cowboys might be in decline and even looking for a new quarterback this time next year, and that's going to be prime time football to behold. Houston going in, not to mention Stephon Diggs potentially going against his brother, Trayvon Diggs, right? Receiver-corner combo. So a lot of good storylines in that one. I'm guessing that ends up in a very prominent and premier spot in the national TV lineup.
You also have the Bills facing the Texans this upcoming season as well. That was quickly pointed out after this trade earlier on Wednesday. Oh, by the way, the Texans and Bills, yeah, they face one another this coming season. So Cardinals don't have to worry about Diggs. They do. Wait, yeah, they don't have to worry about Diggs. They do have to worry about Josh Allen, though.
Yep.
And Paul has to worry about the weather. And hopefully when that schedule gets released mid-May, that it's an early trip to the East Coast and not November or December.
Yeah, there's a top three of potential weather issues. There's Buffalo. There's Green Bay. When are the Cardinals going to Lambeau? And then there's Miami. You're going to Miami. And if it isn't the humidity of September, it could be the torrential driving rain they faced how many years ago?
The
rain that came down in sheets at that last Dolphins game, and Pat P just laughing on the sideline because he's like, I grew up 10 minutes from here. Of course, this is nothing. I'm like, so, yeah, that's on the radar, those three games, Lambeau, Buffalo, and Miami.
What Paul has to worry about more recent, and that is a dentist appointment coming up on Wednesday.
Come on, Craig.
As well.
Yeah, there's a dentist appointment later today, and then there's the root canal that's known as tax season. We'll just better left that.
Well, maybe we have to go revisit this at some point in the next couple weeks. 12 days and counting, though, Paul, for everyone that's keeping track of that date. Yeah.
So once again, there'll be no disposable income to speak of for any sort of Final Four tickets. Stop texting me.
On that note, we'll put a lid on this edition of Cardinals Cover 2 presented by Hyundai, proud partner of the Arizona Cardinals. As always, special thanks to our executive producer, Jim Omohundro, our associate producer, Cody Fincher. For Paul Calvisi, I'm Craig Riolu. We'll talk to you next time here on Cardinals Cover 2.